Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome and thank you for joining us today. The next 2 hours are devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we believe as we do. A time for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas behind what we think we know and who we might become. In today's episode, we're going to once again examine how we break through self-imposed limitations, limitations that hold us back, keeping us stuck when there is so much more that we want to experience in our lives. We will examine the question, who we are, where we want to be, and how we can go about accomplishing that objective. And once more, we'll use the real-life story of a famous and successful person to help us map out our path. And along the way, we're going to discover some really interesting things from this person that can assist us in our path, in how we're living today, and what we're consuming, and how we're aging. I'm really excited about today's guest. So the question, how did I get where I am, and how do I get where I want to be, becomes our central inquiry in this episode of Breaking Limitations. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is a Provocative Enlightenment Special Investigation. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner Ravinder awaits you there now. You can log on by going to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. We have a great chat room with some very special folks that join us every week, so don't miss out. Join the chat room today. Okay, Rav, it's time for you to invite everyone to the chat room and tell us what makes it so special.
It's so special because I'm there. At least I am there normally. I've been having my own technical issues this morning. But the chat room is live, and my assistant, Andrea, is in there, and the conversation is heating up. It's a great place to get additional information about whatever we're talking about on the air. So it adds a whole new dimension. If you go to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat, you can enter the chat room. I also include information on that page regarding any special offers that we may have, or, you know, if we manage to persuade the guests to make a special deal for our listeners only, which we have today. So do go check it out. You can go to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. I would also remind everyone to remember to subscribe to the Provocative Enlightenment newsletter as well. Sometimes we send the information out on the radio show to our entire list. Sometimes it only goes to those people who have subscribed to Provocative Enlightenment. So if you want to stay informed, definitely subscribe there, even if you do get newsletters at other times. So just go to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat, join the conversation, and get access to all the other information. I'll see you there.
All right. In our spotlight of the week, we look back to this day in history, December 4th, 1981, when President Ronald Reagan promulgated Executive Order 12,333. Establishing United States Intelligence Guidelines. Restrictions on the Central Intelligence Agency were instituted in the 70s in response to disclosures of widespread wrongdoing. The opposition to this order insisted that the order reflected the president's determination to unleash America's intelligence community. The order allowed the CIA, America's chief foreign intelligence gathering entity, to direct domestic counterintelligence, foreign intelligence, covert operations, and law enforcement activity against United States citizens. The drafters of the order ignored the statutory limits on intelligence gathering activity codified in the National Security Act. As you can imagine, many insisted that the president's action constituted a statutorily impermissible license for renewed government intrusion, and the order should be revoked. Fast forward to the PRISM matter and the NSA, and that makes what happened in the 70s seem innocent by comparison, except for the precedent. It would appear that spying on the citizens of America is not just a routine matter today, but a necessary one. Slippery slopes will do that to you. There's always going to be a security need, and fear will be the salesperson robbing you of your constitutional rights. As Benjamin Franklin once stated, quote, those who would trade in their freedom for their protection deserve neither. Those who give up their liberty for more security neither deserve liberty nor security, close quote. Now, Ravinder, you and I have discussed this sort of invasion, and indeed, you read my book, Mind Programming, and you're currently editing my newest book, Gotcha, The Subordination of Free Will. And it includes this sort of privacy issue together with hundreds of others that most people are just unaware of. So do you have any thoughts on this one?
Oh, I think it's absolutely invaluable. I am going through your book right now. And, you know, it's not the kind of book that I would pick up in a bookstore. You know, it's not the type of thing that I think about, but this is mind-blowing information. It's all of those things that, you know, we may have heard about, but we kind of dismiss it. Like, who cares what I do? Who cares what I buy at the grocery store? Who cares? You know, what does it matter? How can it harm me if someone is aware of what my favorite color is? Well, watch out. That's all I can say. This book is changing my life. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it.
All right. So you kind of feel that all of this added security is necessary?
No. The fact is, talk about a slippery slope. We have just gone off the deep end and in shark-infested waters.
You remember we had this conversation earlier this week about the facial expression software that they're now, you know, cameras are watching you in retail. They're watching you in other places, reading emotions. You have any thoughts on that kind of thing?
You know,
and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
All of this stuff comes in so slowly. I think that's the scary part about it. You know, you understand what marketers are doing, and they're trying to find better ways to
reach their
audience.
Do you really think people understand that?
Well, you know, they kind of dismiss it. You know, they dismiss the car salesman. You know, it's all part of the same spectrum. It's just people have no idea how extreme it is. You know, I think society has changed drastically. And from a spiritual perspective, too, this information is still absolutely vital because you've been puppeted. There is no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You want to find yourself. You have to know the information. And you have to do something. You have to care. You really do have to care. This is part of oneness. Very interesting spin on oneness, but that's what it is.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. We'll get to that. Okay. Every week I read some of your letters as our way of paying respect to the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our guest was Dr. Larry Dossey, and we discussed his new book, The One Mind. Celestial B commented, quote, perhaps the closer we observe the concept of one mind, we will become more aware of how that generalization has been utilized by social engineers to manipulate large groups of people, close quote. Well, you're so very right about that, Celestial B. Not only that, but the closer you examine the idea, the more qualifications you must add. Dr. Dossey explained that he would not accept a model of time, but did believe the one mind to be omniscient, and therefore, out the window goes the notion of free will. Everything is predestined, preordained. But as Dossey also pointed out, we sort of just ignore that so our social order can maintain some cohesion, and we can punish the criminal. But wait, who then becomes the real criminal? Personally, I like the idea of one mind, but struggle with defining exactly what I mean by that. And as Dossey also admitted, sometimes that one mind, or the part of it that many tune into, gives rise to some truly hateful, horrible events, such as Rwanda or Nazi Germany. It would seem that if the one mind is transmitting, as Dr. Dossey explained, it is transmitting the thoughts of everyone, and therefore, we must be truly careful as to what channel we tune into. The hive consciousness may not be the consciousness we want to participate in. All right, author wrote, I could have listened to Dr. Dossey and you discuss the one mind for hours. Thank you for shows that offer more than the typical fluff. Mandy wrote, you're a one-of-a-kind, Eldon. No one else asks the hard questions. I sometimes wonder if they even understand what their guests are on about. And how about that letter? You took a verbal bashing and dared to share it with everyone. That, too, took guts. Now, Mandy's referring to a letter of dissent, one that argued, I had no right, or for that matter, I didn't have good sense to challenge others in my own industry for wasn't, you know, I mean, that kind of activity just simply wasn't good business. Elaine remarked, Eldon proves his integrity to not be shy of such a letter and to speak out on it and respond to it. I'm attracted to Eldon's provocative enlightenment for exactly the reason that he is seeking truth. Dana wrote, I am thoroughly enjoying your archived radio broadcasts of provocative enlightenment. I consider myself more aware than the average person and lead a pretty self-examined life. I am an insatiable learner, constantly evolving my construct of the world. I consider myself a philosopher. Your programs have certainly expanded my consciousness. Well, thank you, Dana. I share your passion for Sophia. Glenn wrote, Eldon and Ravinder, I love your show and have read and or own all of your books. Your shows are always thought-provoking. Thank you. Emmanuel wrote, thank you for all the good work you do. I listen to you every week from the UK. Your provocative enlightenment is amazing. Andy wrote, the Power Imaging Weight Loss CD was a tremendous help to me a few years ago in my fitness weight loss transformation. I think I'm going to pull that disc out to bolster my success once again. Your voice is so soothing. Renee wrote, I bought your Inner Talk Weight Loss Now and played it instantly. My light bulb moment was my craving for broccoli. Never a veggie fan, this was really different. I was eating broccoli. I mean, really. Who is this person? Ha! Then I read the affirmations. So, I've now lost 30 pounds rather effortlessly. I feel like I have control for the first time in my life. You know, isn't it interesting, Ravinder, what a simple message such as, I like vegetables, can do?
Yeah, it is. Now you've got me wondering, you see. Before I met you, I never ate broccoli, and now I love broccoli too. But I haven't played that particular program. But we do hear that a lot. You know, people will say that, you know, I play that program and I'm drinking water, or I chose an apple over a piece of chocolate cake instead. You know, we get that so much.
You know, the one that really we get all the time, you just touched on, and that's the water, you know. There are a lot of messages on the weight loss programs that talk about, I like water, water is good for me, I drink water, water's healthy. And invariably, you know, when you're talking to somebody, And they've taken their affirmation card out and read it maybe a week or 2 weeks after they've started using the program. And they read that, they say, no wonder I'm drinking so much water. It is amazing how the mind works. Okay, Patty wrote, I find the quality of your voice incredibly soothing, friendly, familiar, and comforting. It reminds me of Casey Kasem doing his dedications, the weekend radio shows. Remember those? Well, I certainly do, Patty. I'll date myself as well. And thank you. Casey Kasem is one of my favorites.
It's amazing how many times people have said you remind them of Casey Kasem.
Well, I'll take that. That's a flattery. I mean, that is flattering in my opinion. Casey Kasem is a great one. Okay, that's all the time we're going to take for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming. And once again, I both appreciate and thank you for your feedback and continued support. All right. Now, if you're new to this show, you may enjoy our archives. You can find more than 5 years of archives at our site, provocativeenlightenment.com. During that time, we have interviewed Hollywood greats, politicians, psychics, CIA personnel, hard scientists, skeptics, philosophers, social psychologists, best-selling authors, channels, mediums, and more. We have charted the waters of parapsychology, psychic phenomena, UFOs, NDEs, physics, psychology, criminology, neuromarketing, brainwashing, and still more. If any of that sounds like your kind of radio, check out our archives, again, at provocativeenlightenment.com. Be sure to subscribe to our free newsletter while you're there. Okay, now to this week's show, a special episode of our Breaking Limitations series. Breaking Limitations was originally designed to be a telecourse or webinar, but the interest was so keen that we decided to make it available as a worldwide radio broadcast. Provocative Enlightenment is a syndicated show and airs on many networks, and for more information about that, just visit provocativeenlightenment.com. All right, this week's special episode of Breaking Limitations features an incredible woman. Donna Gates is the international best-selling author of The Body Ecology Diet, The Baby Boomer Diet, Anti-Aging Wisdom for Every Generation, and Stevia, Cooking with Nature's Calorie-Free Sweetener. Her mission is to change the way the world eats. Over the past 25 years, Donna has become one of the most loved and respected authorities in the field of digestive health, diet, and nutrition, enjoying a worldwide reputation as an expert in candida, adrenal fatigue, autism, autoimmune diseases, weight loss, and anti-aging. She regularly contributes to the Huffington Post and the Daily Love. Donna reintroduced fermented foods to the U.S. and coined the phrase inner ecosystem to describe the network of microbes that maintain our basic physiological processes, from digestion to immunity. Body ecology is a revolutionary system of healing in response to the major deficiencies in medicine and the commonplace approach to treating symptoms while ignoring root causes. The Body Ecology Diet was the first of its kind, sugar-free, gluten-free, and probiotic-rich, and has been adopted by doctors and health practitioners alike. Donna has certified hundreds of body ecologists who passionately spread her teachings throughout the United States, Canada, England, Australia, and New Zealand. Donna's groundbreaking work has been instrumental in transforming the natural foods industry. Donna first introduced the natural sweetener Stevia to the U.S. in 1994. I owe her a personal thank you for that one. Donna works with top doctors in the field who view her diet as instrumental in changing the theory behind and treatment of the disorder autism. She founded Body Ecology Diet Recovering Our Kids, or Bedrock, BEDROK.org, an active online community of over 2,000 parents, many of whom have seen their children in full recovery. And that alone deserves a super wow. Now, she has already anticipated my question regarding her songs of life, and she has informed us that they are Imagine by John Lennon, Be For Real by Leonard Cohen, and Magnolia by J.J. Hale. Living for today. In my mother's own country, there isn't harm to do. Come to kill or die for. And no religion to. Okay, there's a little bit of a refresher on Imagine. So, with that, let's get her in here. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Donna Gates.
Wow, what an introduction, Eldon. Thank you very much for that and for also bringing me on.
Well, you deserve it. You really deserve it. What have you been up to? I bumped into you, what's it been, 6 months ago? And I haven't seen you since.
In Pasadena. We've been together in Pasadena.
So what have you been up to?
Oh, the same old thing. I always stay pretty focused on what I'm up to, which is changing the way the world eats. It's a mission I decided to take on naively about, 25 years ago or something, and I'm still working at it.
You know,
and little by little, making some progress. There's a lot of us working on that same mission, I might say.
Yeah, I want to give our listening audience a heads up. We will be showing a film that features you at the top of the hour and in our chat room. And the thing about this film that I want everybody to be aware of is you're now 60. Is that correct, Donna?
Actually, you know what? Today's my birthday. I'm 67.
67. Wow.
Yeah, that means I'll be 70 in 3 years, which is sort of like weird. Like, I think that sounds
happy,
like a really
happy
old number,
birthday.
But I don't really think it's a, you know, I mean, the number sounds old, but reality doesn't seem old, you know.
Well, now I'll tell you what. Anybody that sees you or sees a photograph, sees you in action, there's no way they're going to take you to be beyond mid-40s.
And of course, one of the things
you teach is how to reverse the aging or the anti-aging diet. And I want to get to that, but that's incredible. And once again, happy, happy birthday, huh?
Well, thank you very much. You're the first to wish me happy birthday. I appreciate that.
Thanks,
I forgot it was my
two.
Birthday. I don't count birthdays. So.
Hey, Donna, I'm going to be number two, so I wish you happy birthday, too.
You look I can tell it's going to be a great
incredible.
Day already. Good way to start the day.
And you get younger every day.
Funny thing. Say that again?
I say, and you get younger every day.
Well, I really do believe that that aging as we have been, always have been, is kind of a myth, and it needs to be changed. So I appreciate you saying that, because I think we need a lot of examples on the earth of people who really aren't aging typically, you know, the way we think it's supposed to be. But also, I think that the definition of aging, like not just how a person looks, I don't have any gray in my hair. I'm thrilled about that, but I don't have to color it and go through all that mess. But the thing is, too, there's so much more about aging. Like, you know, I'm actually truly healthier and happier than I was when I was 30 or 40 years old. And I'm very limber, and, you know, I really don't wake up with a sense of aging. I mean, usually when people are aging, they don't breathe as well or walk as well or, you know, they ache somewhere in their body. You know, that's normally what happens, but I'm positive we don't have to. I'm glad I'm getting to experience aging where the years are going by, but none of that's happening in my body, and I think that will soon be the norm for everybody. I really, really do think that we've just about looked at the end of aging, truly.
Well, one of the
things
that is so
science. That, go ahead,
one of the things that is so attractive about what you do is the fact that you do indeed walk your talk. You are a representation of what you teach, and an incredible one at that. Listen, you provided us with three of your favorite songs, and along the way during our time together today, I'll be asking you about each, why this song and how you relate to them. And that's because, you know, often our songs reveal quite a bit about us. They tell us they've got some self-disclosure in them. So let's begin with Imagine. Why is this song an expression of your life?
Well, I think truly, you know, I would say many of us that are associated with Hay House certainly know this is true, because many of us are sort of saying the same thing, that if you believe in a world that is full of joy and love, and people are non-judgmental and caring, sincerely caring about each other, and that if we keep holding that vision in our mind, that it will come to be. And it's been true for me. Like, I really have always imagined a world where people were free of disease, where babies were born, that they came in healthy, and that's not happening, unfortunately, right now. But, you know, they were born into a world where it was so easy to be happy, where it was so easy to be healthy, that they felt very loved right from the very, very, very beginning, I mean, from conception even. And so if you hold that, if you keep imagining that, if you can imagine that world, I'm positive we can achieve it. And I feel like a lot of my own success has come from that. I can really see a world that's like that. I can see it so close that it's not that much more that we have to change or do before we can have that beautiful vision. So I love that song. I just have always thought, wow, this is an amazing song. So it's been a long-time favorite.
It's a dream very much like John Lennon himself had, and it's a very admirable dream. We've got a hard break coming up here, so when we come back from the break, I'm gonna ask you to develop an idea about who you were in your younger years and what was important to you, so that we can see the path that you've come through in order to accomplish all that you have. And then later we'll turn to just exactly what it is you teach. Okay. We're speaking with Donna Gates about body ecology, her books, Life and Work. Remember to join Ravinder and her team in the chat room. You can do that by going to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. Do stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after a few words from some of our friends.
You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor. Have you talked to yourself lately? What does that inner voice say? Are you constantly hearing negative feedback? Ready for a change? Inner Talk, Eldon Taylor's patented subliminal technology, can do just that. Change your inner self-talk. Turn off the negative by replacing it with positive affirmations. Inner Talk has been researched at universities such as Stanford and by governments around the world, and has been proven effective at priming your self-talk. Armed with a new positive outlook, you'll find everything becomes easier, from losing weight to stop smoking, giving presentations to riding horses. Learn new things to being a powerful salesperson. Choose your title for change today. Visit www.innertalk.com. That's InnerTalk.com. InnerTalk.com.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Donna Gates about her books, The Body Ecology Diet, The Baby Boomer Diet, Anti-Aging Wisdom for Every Generation, and Stevia, Cooking with Nature's Calorie-Free Sweetener. All right, we just played some of Be For Real by Leonard Cohen. Why is this song so important to you, Donna? I mean, you know, it says, I don't want to hurt again. I mean, how does this fit into your life?
Well, it's just that, you know, that's, I love Leonard Cohen, first of all. That's how I found him. I found that song. Someone played it for me. I just love the idea that that's what we really need to always be in any relationship, including the relationship with ourselves. We need to be, that I think that's one of the reasons we're here, actually, is to learn who we are and really learn who we are, not who our parents told us we are, or our teachers told us we should be, or whatever, but who are we really? And so I'm also quite fascinated by genetics, and, you know, I was very excited when scientists mapped out the whole human genome, and then, you know, I began to learn about that, and I thought, wow, for years and years and years I've been teaching people about the principle of uniqueness, that each one of us are very unique, so there isn't, like, one diet for anybody. You know, we shouldn't all be paleo or raw or macrobiotic or whatever. We have to find exactly what works for us. And so when the genes, you know, when in looking at your genes, that's even more true than ever. So I just think in all levels, physically, emotionally, spiritually, what we're here to do is be us, you know, be authentically us. I just love that concept. I mean, I think it's something that we should teach. I tried to do that with my own children. I didn't want to put my stuff into them. I wanted them to be them, whoever they were already kind of destined to be. So I just think, you know, that song is
great song. Really, I love
about
it.
Hurting, but it's more about just being real in any relationship.
So were you always real? I mean, tell us about your younger life. I mean, what was school like for you? Were you popular, a member of a group, a loner, or how do you see yourself?
It's so funny. I've never really thought too much about that, but yes, I mean, I have an answer for that. I was raised in the South in Georgia, and I was it was hard to be me because I thought differently than other people, and my friends would tease and laugh at me with my ideas. They, you know, I was popular. I mean, I had friends, and they seemed to love me anyway, in spite of the fact that I didn't think the way everyone else did. But I was glad to leave the South rather young because, my 20s, I got out of there. Because it was too confining for me. You know, I didn't believe in a lot of the, you know, people were just too judgmental, and at least in my world, they were. And there was a lot of racism, obviously, and in where I grew up, there wasn't much support to be something. You know, nobody believed that I had any talents or skills or abilities, and there wasn't any helping me become who I was. Nobody identified anything unique or special or good about me. So I needed to be away from that to start finding that on my own. So that's really an interesting thing. I never really thought about that much, but it was hard. You know, I do remember standing in the living room of my grandmother's house once and watching her. I'm kind of a people watcher. I like to watch people. And I remember thinking what a negative person she was, and I thought about my mother and how negative. Yeah, I realized this is something that's been going on in our family for generations and generations. A lot of criticism instead of complimenting and appraising each other. There was always a lot of criticism, and I thought, you know, the buck stops here as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to break this tradition, and I really did try as a parent to catch myself anytime that part of me started coming out, because you know you learn that, and sometimes you are that way, and you have to change that, but. My kids are really different. They're positive and happy, and they're really good people. And I get that complimented a lot, what nice, good people they are. So it did stop in their generation. I'm glad for that. But no, it wasn't easy growing up in the South. I wasn't your typical Southern woman, which is an interesting story.
The Southern woman is kind of cast in a role, and, you know, it's also you're growing up at a time, you know, when, well, for all intent and purposes, you're going to see racism at its worst, and you're going to see, you know, you're going to go through that period where busing becomes the law, where anti-discrimination, all of that change happens, and, you know, so... At what point were you able to gather up your resources and say to yourself, you know, this is who I'm going to be, and I'm not going to be any of this that has been foisted upon me by my society?
Well, that was actually a long time in coming, because I married somebody and we moved to the Midwest, and, you know, he went to Dartmouth and University of Michigan, and all of our friends were from excellent schools, really highly educated, and, you know, in those days, and this, what was that, 68 or 7, you know, in that period, if you were from the South and you had a Southern accent, people thought you weren't very intelligent. So I remember at parties, and people would say, first thing they'd say to me is, oh, you're from the South. So I knew it also meant, oh, and therefore you're not very well educated or intelligent. So I remember going home one night, literally lying in bed thinking, this isn't working for me to have this Southern accent. And I just literally, I know this sounds hard to believe, but it's true. I woke up this next morning with the accent I have now. I mean, my Southern accent is gone. Everyone in my family has one. I just, you know, sometimes I can slip back into it. But I just decided then. So I don't know if that was probably not being real to myself. I probably should have gone on with my Southern accent and showed that women can, I was, you know. But I don't know. It was probably a long, long time. You know, I think I look back and I think all of life is discovering yourself. You know, who are you? I think one of the things that helped me, because I also really was, came from a super critic. I mean, in my family, everybody criticized you. Nobody ever praised you. So I had a poor image of myself. And I think the reason I, you know, slowly began to change that is that, you know, every time you do something that helps another person, it makes you feel better about yourself. And so I was fortunate to, you know, I think my nature is to enjoy helping others. And so, you know, that made me feel better about myself. And then, of course, I eventually, you know, here and there stumbled on the path that I'm on now. So I'm able to help people. That makes me feel good about what I'm doing. Anytime we have successes, you know, wherever they are, I think we start to feel better about ourselves. I know having children was wonderful for me because I didn't have a really good family growing up, and one of the things I wanted was to have a happy family. And so as I, began to create that made me feel better about myself too. But no, it's actually been, I would say my number one lesson perhaps for being here has been to learn to love myself.
You know, I don't think there's anything, and you correct me if your life experience teaches otherwise, anything that builds self-esteem, that makes you feel more worthy of living, or that teaches you self-love more than when you're helping other people, when you're going to the aid of somebody in need. That's, you know, to me, that evidences, I think, what you know, you can say our purpose in life really is.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, Donna, how important is spirituality then to you in your life?
Well, I was raised as a Catholic, that didn't work for me. At a really early age, I remember being 6 to 7 years old, sitting in class, you know, and being taught something, I think virgin birth or something like that, from the nuns. And I thought, this doesn't compute. I think I'm very, very spiritual, innately, intuitively spiritual, and also enough of a scientist that things have to kind of match up for me. So I remember there's a lot of things I was being taught that didn't work. And so I did always have my, you know, these sort of vibrations out in the universe to find out the truth. I'm also a Sagittarius, so they're seekers of the truth. And I think what, you know, happened for me was that over time I was able to, when I got into studying macrobiotics, that exposed me to Chinese medicine, but also to Chinese philosophy about God and that was really wonderful for me to see that another part of the world didn't see God the way we did, and that matched me, was a better fit for me. So just along the way, though, I kind of feel that when people are in a level of, they're, you know, that just like anything else, we're all in different levels, and that for people that are, you know, in a religion that's very judgmental, I remember going back to into the Catholic Church for a wedding. Many years later, and sitting there and noticing how dark the church was. You know, it was dark because the windows had stained glass, and there's all these stations of the cross, all these pictures of Jesus, you know, bleeding, carrying his cross, the big crown on his head, and I thought, wow, this is so negative. What a terrible thing to grow up in a religion with so much suffering, you know, and it didn't, never fit for me. So I found my way to my own, you know, belief system, which is what a lot of us believe today, that, you know, we just have our own personal connection with God, whatever is God, and that's pretty much where I am. But I absolutely believe in a power. I think along the way what I've been able to do is really tune into that power and trust that power to guide me, and that many of the things that I have done, everything I've done really that's been good, and has also been good for other people in the world, has come from that guidance that I receive from tuning into that power. And I'm not even sure, you know, that we can define it or put it into words. God works for some people. That term doesn't work for other people. But there's a power there, and it loves and guides us. And I can feel, and I'm very obedient to it. You know, I think I would say all of my success really comes from having learned to tune into that power.
It's very interesting. Tell us then, Donna, what got you interested? I mean, at what point did you become the body ecology person?
Well, that's a good question after what I just said. You know, I didn't become this intentionally. I thought when I was growing up, I knew there was something about food and the way we ate that was important. So maybe I had that learning from another lifetime, I don't know. But I always would watch people and say, he covers his food in pepper and then, you know, just whatever. This person's eating a lot of fried food. This person eats a lot of chocolate. And then I'd look and see how they acted and how they looked and everything. And so there's always been this knowing that there's a connection between what we eat and who we become. But then, so I went to college to be a dietitian, and I went to, you know, just about to graduate from college, and went to work in a VA hospital, and I thought, oh, my God, this is not what I want to do, because it was another cold, sterile place, everything vibrational. It was just the wrong vibration for me. So I was about to get married in a year, and my fiancé was over in Vietnam, so I stayed in school and finished with a degree in child development, because that's the other thing. I've always been really, really fascinated with how we develop. And I especially love the prenatal period. But in those days, many years ago, there wasn't so much known about the prenatal period like there is today. But it's just been another fascinating area for me. So, you know, I was studying these things, but it's amazing because now everything fits in. Here I am today, and all that information is all working for me. But, you know, I always had this feeling when I was a little kid that I was just specifically here to do something. And I didn't know what it was. So a very large part of my life, I kept thinking, what is it? When do I get to do it? And I look back now, when it finally did start happening, and it happened slowly, but when it did start happening, I realized that everything I ever did was part of training for what I do today. Everything, every relationship I had, every mistake I made, everything was training me to do what I do now. And, of course, like a lot of people, I got on this path because of health and healing, because I was not healthy, and I was trying to be a healthier, happier person, and so I was looking for answers, and I tried everything, you know, mega supplements and raw food and macrobiotics and, you know, everything that's available. I did it all. And everything was valuable to a certain degree and then still missing other, you know, pieces of information. But, you know, I went to Japan because, and again, the strong voice inside of me, the strong feelings that starts as a little voice that gets bigger and bigger and bigger so that I can't ignore it, you know, told me to go to Japan and study with Lima Asawa. So I did. And she started the macrobiotic movement with her husband, and I had been macrobiotic for 8 years. I went over and studied with her and graduated from her academy and came back to the U.S., and I realized that all the time of being with her and talking to her and learning things, I realized that macrobiotics wasn't being taught the way she and her husband had intended. It didn't have the spirituality that they put into it, and it was too rigid. You know, if you didn't cut your onion just the right way, your cancer would disappear. And that was missed the point completely. And when I graduated, she said to me, take the truth about macrobiotics to the world. And so that her voice, like that, and one other thing she said to me kind of hung in my mind. When she said, I asked her one time, I said, if you have to, she was like 84 at this point. She was supposed to be over 101 months, and then she died. But she was real strong and hearty at 84, much healthier than I was at that moment. And she said that if she had to do her life over again, she would go all around the world, and she liked to apply the macrobiotic principle to foods, you know, all over the world, different types of foods. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, that's pretty profound, because the principles is what she would hold on to. The foods could change. So when I came back to the U.S., I thought, we're just eating brown rice and miso soup, and you know, that we don't have to do that. It's the principles. Then I began to wonder, well, what other principles are out there, universal laws or principles that are important to learn to live by? Right at that time, I met Dr. William Crook, who had just written the book called The Yeast Connection. Very fortuitously, I had an opportunity to sit under a fountain with him for about 20 minutes, and he talked to me, and he said, you know, we know who was around, just the two of us, pretty amazing. And he said, you know, he was writing about the yeast connection and how serious this new condition was. And he said, you know, we don't think we have an answer for that. We don't think there's really a cure for this. So I naively went home and thought, there has to be, I'll find it. And that's what then put me on the path that eventually, you know, I began looking for answers and pulling things together from everything I learned. I kept asking the universe, or whatever you want to call that power, to teach me other principles that were important that would help us heal. And that's how Body Ecology came about. It's based on 7 universal laws that I was shown, you know, taught, and sort of was able to see how they could be applied to anything, but especially to healing. And that's where the whole Body Ecology way came about. Then, like anything else, you know, of course I started doing it myself and following it, but people come to you that are in the same spot, you know, they're confused and they're suffering as well. And so I would teach people what I knew, and they would, and it worked. And over and over and over again, people would get well. Even with autism, and let me know, Eldon, if I need to stop talking because of the time, but autism, you know, I love children. I think what most motivates me at the deepest core is, you know, my concern that I really, really, really want to have a world where children are born healthy, and I'm really concerned about children, and I know that they're in trouble today when you see these school shootings and, you know, these poor kids in trouble, and it's so, it doesn't have to be that way. So, you know, so I've always had this kind of real longing in my heart to make a difference in the world to help children. So what happened was I started hearing about this thing called autism, and I went finally to a conference in Atlanta a DAN conference, Defeat Autism Now, and I sat there and learned all about what was going on in these kids. They all had, you know, they had yeast infections, they had heavy metals, they had digestive problems, they had blah, blah, blah. And I sat there and I thought, you know, I work with people with these problems all the time, except for the mental behavior, but everything else, I know what to do. And then downstairs, I went downstairs, and there was a whole bunch of booths down there with people selling products, and every single gluten-free bread or cookie or pancake mix or whatever, they all had sugar in them and bad fats. And I thought, wow, these kids are never, never going to get well if they're selling the parents this. And so I once again went back to that power and said, look, I really want to, I'm ready now. Help me. Well, I wasn't quite ready. I had to come to California and meet somebody who showed me how to open coconuts, you know, the young coconuts. Right. And people were really into the coconuts out here in California, drinking them like crazy. And I thought, gosh, they've got so much sugar in them. I even noticed somebody who drank one every morning, how quickly he was aging. So I kept thinking, you can't, this is not good. All these coconut water is becoming so popular. And so I suddenly got the idea, which again I feel is a gift sometimes, like this power communicates to us and says, why don't you ferment the coconut water, Donna? So I did. I fermented it and called it Young Coconut Kefir, because I was teaching people already about fermented foods and about coconut, you know, fermenting coconut, I mean, fermenting milk kefir. So we just used the same starter and we started fermenting the coconut water. Well, immediately after, and that took off like crazy. People all over were drinking it with incredible results and, you know, skin getting beautiful, their joints stopped hurting them, periods got balanced. Women that were infertile became able to have a baby. I mean, amazing things happened around this coconut water. And then fermented coconut water. And then right there, my first mom showed up and said to me, you know, she was actually a family member, like a distant cousin, and she heard about what I did, and she called because some doctor had told her that her little autistic son was had a big problem with yeast. So she knew I dealt with yeast problems, and she called me. And she... I didn't really know for sure what to do, but I told her what I thought she should do. She lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I knew for sure she would never find a coconut in Charleston and ever be able to make the coconut water, but she did. She found a bunch of them. She gave Thomas the coconut, fermented coconut water. She was fantastic. She was 2 months pregnant with another baby and didn't want to tell anybody because she'd already had this one, you know, defective child. And so that little baby was born 7 months later, super, super strong, beautiful, happy little baby. But Thomas recovered very quickly, and strangely enough, more parents started coming. We formed a group on the through a Yahoo group and started teaching what we were doing. And so many kids were recovering that in a couple of years, the doctors, autism doctors, met at a conference and a big think tank and changed completely how they were beginning to see this condition called autism and how what they were going to do to help the kids recover. So it was the diet is very, very important. Getting certain foods out of the diet, like sugars, and getting the right foods in, like fermented foods, was a very, very critical factor.
It's a wonderful story, but now I have to ask you a question. I don't mean to cut you off. Mm-hmm. First of all, I know that you did not mean that the child was defective, but that was mother's view of the child.
Yeah, she didn't want to tell anybody.
We'll just get that said. But okay, you know, I listened to your story, and it's a very compelling story, but over and over I hear how you're guided, how you're given this, how the voice tells you this, how you know this coming in. And last week's show was all about One Mind, and in that show, Larry Dossey essentially, you know, stated that, you know, that one mind knows everything. So if that's the instance, do you think you were foreordained to do what you're doing?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think a whole lot of us come in with a purpose. Maybe everybody comes in with a purpose. Some of us more so than others, probably because we're put into positions or events happen that wake us up, maybe. Foreordained, no. I mean, I think really I chose this, and then in asking for help, I've been given that help.
Help.
But you do have to tune into something, you know.
We have a heartbreak coming up, Donna. We'll pick up this conversation in the next hour as we go into it. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. If you're not already in our chat room, now's the time to get there. We have a movie for you during the break featuring today's guest. You're going to want to see this 67-year-old woman, I guarantee you. So be sure to go to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat and choose the chat room button near the top of the page. We'll be right back after a brief station break. I'll get that word said. And once again, happy birthday, Donna.
Thank you very much.
Unlock the power of your mind.
We're chatting with Donna Gates about body ecology, her books, life, and work. But before we get back to the show, I want to invite you to join me on Facebook. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies. And from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. And I love your comments and feedback. It's a great place to leave them. All right, back to the show. Before the break, Donna, you were telling us that you think all of us come in with a purpose, a plan. Do you think everyone can find the success that you have found if they but listen to their own inner promptings?
Yes, I do. And the earlier they start, the better. I think if you start doing it now, then you might not have as great of success because you won't have had as many years at it. I mean, I've been doing this for a really long time. And it'd be great if we could start to teach children that they have a purpose and to start to develop that inner voice, you know, to listen to that inner voice. I think everybody would do extraordinary things, definitely.
All right, let's turn to what your work is now. You indicated earlier that you had some health struggles when you were young, and maybe they assisted in putting you on the path to you know what you have done in your life. Share with us what kind of health problems are you talking about?
I think from the very beginning of my life, I was one of those people that didn't digest their food properly. And, of course, it was the wrong food for me. And this is a common, you know, thing for a lot of people. But I also, by the time I was a teenager, my skin broke out. And I started taking antibiotics. And then I developed unknowingly a condition called candidiasis, which is a yeast infection, which is what I teach about now. And, I just had everything wrong with me, all the problems that come up with having a yeast infection. And, of course, you know, birth control pills, lots of women take those, and that contributes to the problem, too. So everything I ate and the medications I took for a long time, the antibiotics and the birth control pills, really contributed to this yeast condition. And that's, so I started to find out, you know, what was wrong with me. And then I met Dr. Crook, and his book, The Yeast Connection, came out. And I realized, oh, that's what I've got. Let me start working at correcting that. And that's how the body called you. You know, that's the diet was originally developed to help. And then the book, the first book, The Body Called You Diet, was originally to show people what they had to do to overcome a systemic yeast infection. And however, as soon as they put the book out, all these other people said, my Parkinson's went away, my you know, so many, many MS, so just many, many conditions cleared up. And, you know, again, it works really effectively for autism. So, I widened it out and realized, wow, this isn't just for candidiasis, for yeast infections. This really is how we should be taking care of our body. And of course, many, many, like two decades have gone by where I've looked and found all the science to support everything I teach. Now, I now understand why it works so well, which I didn't really know that 20 years ago because I was just being kind of, I really felt guided. I really do. I'm almost feel embarrassed to say that, but I know you have a more open audience. But I do feel that it was, I was being kind of led down a path that allowed me to meet this person and learn this bit of information and discover stevia, for example. You know, I was putting it out there that we have got to have something other than sugar, NutraSweet, and Equal to get if we're going to get well. And that's how I was just kind of, I feel guided to discover this white powder over in China called stevia roboticide, which really is more, is 85% roboticide. But we use the term stevia because it was kind of, I don't know, just we just said stevia instead of roboticide. It's an easier word. It's what, you know, was now been improved by Coke and Pepsi, and what, and is what in all, it's in all kinds of foods today. But many years ago, it was just a huge battle to bring it in and sell it sort of illegally. You weren't supposed to bring it over. They never said you couldn't sell it. They just said you couldn't bring it in. But through an amazing arrangement, I had a huge amount of it sent to me from China as a gift. My half of my garage was filled with this white powder, and then the FDA put a ban on it couldn't come in anymore. And I thought, oh my goodness, well, I don't need to bring it in. I'm gonna sell it. I'm gonna help people have this stuff, and that's really where the money first came from to start Buddy Ecology as a company. But it was amazing too because Robert Atkins found me and was really interested and helped me promote stevia. Then Joanne Whitaker. He wrote about it, and it went out to about 500,000 people in a newsletter. And so it just had this power behind it that people were finding out about it. So thousands and tens of thousands of people were actually using it when the first ban was lifted, and they allowed it to be called a dietary supplement. And then a couple of years ago, both Coke and Pepsi applied to have it approved fully as a sweetener, and it is now a full sweetener. But it was quite a battle for a couple of years. But again, you know, all that, I feel, was kind of a miracle the way that all happened.
How does that make you feel? I use stevia, and I know that I've recommended it to everybody, and aspartame is a problem in other sweeteners. Mm-hmm. We can get to all that kind of stuff in a minute, but I mean that is a monumental contribution in my view to the wellness of our culture. How does it make you feel to look back on that and see that, you know, you were the pioneer. You were the one that made it happen.
Well, you know, I don't really feel I deserve the credit for that. I feel like I saw a need. You know, I identified a need. We have to have something other than sugar. And I asked for help. And then an amazing arrangement. I have to tell you real quickly the story. My husband was very connected to some people at the Chinese embassy, and they would invite us over for dinner. We became really good friends. And they had a son they had two sons, and they were both here in school. One was in Pennsylvania at a great school there. But his girlfriend was way over in Australia, and she couldn't get into the country. So because, you know, the government wouldn't let her in. And so they hadn't seen each other for 2 years. And I remember going home thinking, gosh, you know, we have these laws where people can't travel freely around the world. It's so unfair. You know, these young couple who love each other can't be together. So I had my husband write a letter on his stationery to invite her to a conference, and she was actually allowed to come in for that conference. And then they once she got here, you know, they got married. Well, her father was head of China Airlines, and they wanted to thank me for doing that. And they sent me, and I had been asking about stevia because I'd sort of tracked it down and realized that it was grown in, you know, China for the Japanese market and only used commercially. People weren't using it. Nobody knew what it was, mm-hmm. This white powder. And it's just an extract from the stevia plant. There's a couple of sweet elements in the leaf, and this is an extract. And so the postman arrives at my door one day and says he has a package for me. And I said, well, just leave it right here. He said, well, it's quite a lot of it. So I had him drive around the back, and he started putting it in the where the garage is, and then he came the next day, and the next day, and he came for 7 days with many packages that literally filled up the garage. And then on Friday, the FDA put the ban on. So it was, you know, like things like that. You do something, you have no idea that it's going to lead to something else, but it's going to affect other people's lives. And so, you know, how can you take credit for that, really? I just was doing my thing.
I would say take a bow. That's what I would say. You did your thing, but you also listened. Now, you know, underlying all of your research, you must have come on, you know, some root causes to common health concerns, have you?
Yeah, I think that this issue of candidiasis is a huge, huge issue. And the medical profession, even the functional medicine doctors, the doctors that are much more on top of things, they know that about yeast infections in the body, but they think that you can just take an antifungal drug and be done with it. And I really think that these underlying infections are causing, I know that they're causing serious toxins in the body. You know, we always talk about the toxins that are coming in from the environment, like mercury, lead, and heavy metals and other, you know, chemicals on our food and so on. But Yeah, that's a problem for us. But the chemicals we make inside the body, to me, are even more serious, and people are clueless that they're creating them. And so, you know, this I think toxicity and the, to me, as I see cells, you know, they have to be well nourished, and they have to be kept clean. And if you put cells in a petri dish and you feed them and constantly keep their solution that they're living in clean, they just go on and on and on and on and live a very long, healthy life. Well, we need to think of ourselves that way. Let's keep them, the environment that our cells are bathed in need to be kept clean, and we need to nourish ourselves. And to me, there's the study of healing can be very, very complex, or it can be just as simple as that. Nourish yourselves and keep them clean, and who knows how long we can live. We have never found out yet.
Wouldn't
it be nice to know?
Yeah. You talk about yeast as though it's something we all are prone to. But I think most people don't recognize that that's the instance. You know, they generally think of it differently. Why is it we're prone to yeast infections and developing toxins within our own body?
Well, yeast is a naturally present organism in the body, but it changes very easily at any time into a very pathogenic form. And when it does, it grows I think people are much more aware of bacteria causing harm. Like, we get a bacterial infection, we can be very sick, we can die. If we get a viral infection, like a really bad flu, we can even die. But the yeast are another pathogen that we can have living in our body. And when they grow tentacles and they burrow into the lining, say of the, let's say they start in the gut, and then they grow, because you've taken antibiotics and you've wiped out all of the good bacteria in your gut, now you're left with these yeast in there. They grow these tentacles, they burrow into the mucosal lining, and they create a lot of inflammation, a lot of leaky gut, and they move on through there and get into the bloodstream and can travel anywhere in the body. Now, they rapidly grow. If you feed them, which we do because that's how we eat, then they multiply tremendously, grow quickly throughout the body, and they're affecting the body in so many, many different ways. And people have no idea they have this yeast infection in their body, because it's been one of those infections that the medical and drug companies have suppressed our knowledge about them, because the drugs that we take cause the yeast infection. Somebody with cancer, for example, that goes for chemotherapy or radiation is going to have a very severe acute yeast infection and very often die from the yeast infection, not because of the cancer. They didn't die from the cancer. They died with cancer, but they actually died from the yeast infection. Now, the drug companies don't want us to know that. So this is an area, a very important area. So you should be on a diet that always keeps your yeast under control. You should always be building your immune system, and that's where the other big part of our work, talking about the importance of a healthy gut, a healthy inner ecosystem, a healthy, eating lots of fermented foods to build your, that's what builds your immune system. About 75% of our immune system is housed in our gut. And so we need a strong immune system to be able to live in this world, but also to keep these yeast under control. So, you know, sometimes when people come to Body Ecology, they think, wow, that sounds really complicated. I feel like I'm making it complicated, but it actually isn't. There's just some simple foods that you want to avoid and lots of delicious foods that you can eat. And then we want people to add fermented foods to their diet, because that's what builds our immune system. And the fermented foods also are fantastic cleansers. They cleanse the body of all kinds of toxins, and we need that today. You know, we're living in a very toxic time, so we need to be eating foods that are powerful cleansers. And so really it's actually a very simple system that's been put together that's available today, and it's exactly what we need.
Do you have a program for this? I mean, I know you do. Tell us about your program for this, Donna.
Well, I always like for people to start by reading the Body Ecology Diet book, because that book is the basics. Like, here's how to eat, here's what to eat, here's what not to eat. And that's where we go into the importance of fermented foods and what they are, and you know, how to make them and use them or buy them or whatever. So that's our program. It's pretty much spelled out in that book. But getting back, I mentioned earlier about the seven principles that underlie the foundation of body ecology. I like to teach people about these universal principles, because if you understand them, like, for example, the principle step by step, you know, the universe, the sun comes up in tiny little increments, and throughout the day, the sun goes down in tiny little increments. That's just a fact of our life. But that's also true in healing, too. We get well when you're in a path to become well. It happens day by day by day. Or we make ourselves sick day by day by day in little increments. So I started thinking about this principle of step by step, and it began to become very clear to me that it was a very powerful principle to use for healing. And I'd say, okay, so it's a principle about time. It's a principle about what to do first in your life. And if you want to get well from anything, where do you start? And many people are clueless. Like, they're totally lost because they have no idea what to do and how to put a plan into place. So this is it. You first and foremost do the things that create more energy in your life. So the first thing is create more energy and step by step. The second thing is you've got to start conquering. Well, second thing could be that you're going to start correcting digestion, because really health really does begin in the gut and disease begins there. So you want to have a real healthy gut. You know, eat right, eat the fermented foods, use digestive enzymes to correct digestion. The third thing is you want to start to conquer the infections in your body. And the fourth thing is to cleanse out the toxins. So if you're always doing that, creating energy, conquering the infections, correcting digestion, and cleansing out toxins, if you do those four things on your program to get well, you will get well. That's how we get well. So that principle was, it's a universal principle. It's a law, something that's happening all the time, but it's a principle that we can apply to health, and it worked really, really well.
I missed something there. The first principle was energy. The second principle was correct digestion. The third was conquer infections. What was the fourth?
Cleanse out the toxins.
Cleanse the toxins.
Because we are very much affected by the toxins that we're creating inside us and outside. And we teach people exactly how to do each of those steps. Creating energy, for example, people don't realize it, but our so many things are draining our energy. Negative thoughts, which is an area that you specialize in, of, you know, dealing with that is going to immediately change their physical health. So also doing habits like watching TV at night, because the only thing they have on TV are these exciting shows that raise your cortisol, or the news that depresses you and raises your cortisol. And then we go to bed carrying that energy with us, so we're not going to sleep as well. You know, there's a lot of reasons people are not sleeping well today, but that's they might be checking their email late at night. We're really supposed to be in the dark. We keep the lights on all the time, but what I try to do at my house is, as right now it's winter time, so it's getting dark early. So sure, I keep a little bit of light on so I can see, but I don't have a lot of bright light on. It's amazing, because by 9 or 10 o'clock, you're dying to go to sleep. It's like, oh gosh, I'm so sleepy. Because light stimulates us and keeps us awake. So just simple, tiny little things like that can make a profound effect, because having a good night's sleep is huge. It creates more energy. You wake up the next day feeling fantastic, much more, you know, you're not depressed. You feel all those things you've got to do are even much easier to do when you have the energy to do them. You know, just it's very simple, really. I have a lot to teach. But when you really look at each one of these principles, they're very, very simple.
You gave us four of them. You said there were seven. What are the other three?
Well, the step-by-step principle is just one of them. So I was just explaining the step-by-step principle. So that's only one of the seven. Another one is the principle of uniqueness, that we are each very unique. And that, so if you're out there thinking, okay, now I hear everybody's doing paleo, I think I'll try that now. But you were doing raw, because everybody was doing raw, so you tried that, and that didn't work 100% either. Nothing's going to work for you that everybody else is doing, or that you're reading that you should be doing. You have to tune in to your own body and watch it, you know, and see and try different things and see what really works for you. And, you know, that's the principle of uniqueness, is the fact that we have to stop. And also years ago, when I was starting to teach a lot of information to the raw food community, which rather surprised me, I was being invited to all these raw events to teach about fermented foods. I was kind of surprised that they would invite me, because I don't believe everybody should be raw. And also all the raw people were doing tons of sugar and dates and honey, and I was knew that wasn't good. But what, you know, what I wanted people to realize is that the raw people were judging the paleo. It wasn't called paleo then, it was called the Atkins. But the raw people were judging the high protein people, and the macrobiotic people were judging everybody too. And, you know, I just wanted this whole concept of judgmentalness to disappear from our mind. And that we began to start off with a clean slate and say, okay, what is going to work for me? What do I do best on with? Now, if you have, if you live in a hot climate, like let's say you're living in Hawaii, or it's summertime, wherever you are, and it's really hot, then you don't want to eat a lot of animal protein, and you don't want a lot of fat in your diet because you'll be hot. That's the time of the year when you do want to eat more raw food, juicy raw foods, you know. So that's something, too, that anybody can learn, is how to adjust their diet to meet their individual needs. That's the principle of uniqueness. The principle of balance, that's another one that, that's the whole concept of yin and yang, which Chinese medicine is based on that. You know, when I, like, let's say you're going to make a salad dressing, and you put some oil and some vinegar together, or oil and lemon juice, like olive oil, and you taste the dressing, and it just doesn't taste right. Something's missing, and then you add salt, and now it's perfect. That's because the oil and the vinegar were more expansive, and it needed something grounding and contracting to make it taste good or be balanced. So that's just a simple example of applying the principle of balance. But I teach about that, you know, how to use the principle of balance in our cooking. And again, in a hot, hot summer, we make balance by eating more raw foods and juicy foods. In the morning, we wake up, and everybody just has their cup of coffee and their donut or what, or their bowl of cereal, because that's what they grew up eating. But that's, we have to look at our body and say, okay, it's morning, we just woke up. What does my body need to make balance? Well, we wake up dehydrated because we haven't had anything to drink for a long time. We've been sleeping for, say, 7-8 hours. So the body's dehydrated. It's also acidic. Our body's acidic because we've been lying still. And so in order to make balance, what our body needs first thing is a lot of water with minerals. So it needs to alkalize and hydrate. So just teaching people the simplest things. Wake up in the morning, drink a lot of water with minerals in it, and start, and then throughout your entire morning, everything that goes in your body should be hydrating and alkalizing. Like a wonderful smoothie, for example, is a great thing to have. Because you're putting a lot of vegetables in your blender, and you're alkalizing, but you've got water in that smoothie too, so you're hydrating. That's a great drink. It's not time yet to have, you know, like eggs or something. They can come later, but first hydrate and alkalize. That's what you need to make balance. So it's just learning those simple principles. There's the principle of cleansing. We are constantly producing toxins, and there's a whole bunch to say about the principle of cleansing. I almost hate to open up that door. But I have a brand new book I just finished on the subject of cleansing and detoxification that has our unique approach to cleansing. It's pretty comprehensive and pretty simple. But we have to be mindful today that we have to realize that we are living in a very toxic world, and the toxins are making us sick. And then the stress that we live under, that's a toxin, that cortisol is a toxin, that makes us, it makes a lot of us ill. You know, just identifying, okay, here's what the toxins are, and then beginning to, you know, get rid of them in your life. That's very, very important. It's another part of staying young. You know, people under a lot of stress are the first people that are going to age.
Do your children keep this? I mean, I listen around here, I think you'd probably take a whip to me. I get up in the morning and first thing I have is my coffee. Last thing I have when I go to bed at night is, you know, my wine. How does that
and
score?
And maybe that works for you because genetically you might have the genes that clear the caffeine, but many people don't. So I don't. I don't clear caffeine. So if I have a little piece of chocolate or a cup of coffee, that I'll be wired all day long because my body's not clear. I am not one of those people that can have a piece of chocolate cake at dinner, you know, at 10 o'clock at night in a restaurant and then go to sleep. But some people can. They can have a strong cup of cappuccino and go right to sleep at midnight or something. So maybe that's fine. You know, you can, that has an effect on us. So you might be fine with a cup of coffee, but it's the other things you do besides the cup of coffee that really matters. So I would hope you'd be hydrating. Coffee is acidic, and you're trying to make your body more alkaline. So if you have the cup of coffee, which is acidic, then do something like a big glass of water, a couple of glasses of water with some minerals in it that would be balancing off that cup of coffee.
I hope my mind is compensating for what you just said, because I'm not sure that my body without its help is.
Amazing. You know, they hated growing up with me as a mom. In the house, they thought that with the way it was crazy. I was trying out different things, remember, in those days. And my oldest is 41, and then I had a baby at 44.
We'll pick that story up when we come back from the break. I hope you're enjoying our show today with Donna Gates and our discussion about her books, life, and work. You can visit her website to learn more by going to Body Ecology, BodyEcology, BodyEcology.com. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes and take your phone calls, so do stay tuned.
You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment with Elton Taylor.
Every day, every moment, we face choices. Yet, how many of those choices are truly our own? Are you ready to step onto the path of discovery? Read Eldon Taylor's New York Times bestseller, Choices and Illusions, now revised, updated, and expanded. Eldon combines provocative information, scientific research, and his own life's journey into a powerful message that we have the power to change. All we must do is be willing to choose to take the chance and change. Get your copy today from all bookstores.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Donna Gates about her books, life, and work. We'll take your phone calls during this half hour. So if you have any questions of our guest, either give us a call or submit your questions in our chat room. Ravinder and her team, Andrea and Jana, are there to put your questions forward. Okay, now, Donna, I could sit and listen to that kind of bluesy music with you all day long.
Okay.
But why Magnolia? What is this song about for you?
I just always loved it. Slow, sexy, passionate. It's about a man that, you know, went off and, did his thing. And when he looked, you know, now what he really wants to come back to the one, you know, the person he realizes he loved the most that was there for him. And I just think it's slow, sexy. Again, this is where my Southern roots come out to me. That's, you know, slow, sexy, Southern, passionate.
I don't know so much about the lyrics, but I do love that sound. That is a great, great sound. Okay, listen.
That's T.J. Kale. Very few people know who he is. I'm glad you were even able to find the song.
Yeah, and, you know, performed by others, it takes an entirely different sound. You know, you do need to get it by J.J. Kale to get that sound. That's a great sound. We've got some questions coming into our chat room, and we opened the phones during this last half hour so that we can take some phone calls. But I've got a couple of things I need to tie up with you first, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vegetarianism is, that's the push out there today for health. And you see your cardiac care physician, he tells you, look, I want you to get the salmon or you get the omega oils, as a substitute, fish oil tablets or this, that, and the other. And, of course, we've got the concerns about, you know, the the nuclear mishap in Japan and the Pacific, and we've got other concerns having to do with heavy metals, mercury in particular, where some of the fish are concerned. And so, you know, you have that caveat to add in. Then they're saying, you know, you look at maybe white meats, but stay away from red meats. How do you handle this yourself? From your perspective, what's your view on meat consumption and vegetarianism?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked this question this way because it gives me a chance to kind of show off how effective Body Ecology is. First of all, I think this is the principle of uniqueness. Some of us really should be vegetarian, at least for a while. If I were working with somebody and they called me and they had cancer, I would absolutely put them on a vegetarian diet. I would be very alkaline. You know, cancer is a very acidic condition in the body, so you want to alkalize them. And a vegetarian dinner, more of a vegetarian meal would work. But they've got to be well-nourished. See, one of the things that happens, for example, with cancer is the person develops, they become very malnourished, develop cachexia, which is like a starving condition. So you do want that person to have proteins, but there's great vegetarian proteins. Like, for example, we have a green product that's a little jar with fermented spirulina and a chickpeas and rice and quinoa. No, it's all fermented for 6 weeks. And that is a fantastic vegetarian protein. We also have another green powder that's part, some ingredients in there are fermented. But you want to alkalize and you want to get this, or you might even have somebody take the essential amino acids as a supplement, because you've got to make up for that. You know, again, it's creating balance. The cells need those very important amino acids. They have to have them. So that's what I would say. Now, there are times, like let's say you're working with an athlete and his blood type is O, he should definitely be, having animal protein, and he's going to need more fat in his diet. So over the years, you know, I worked with Peter Diodamo, who wrote the blood type diet. I met his father many years ago, like 30-something years ago, and Peter changed his father's diet considerably. I think the father's original take on blood type was more accurate, but I've been asking people about their blood type for 36 years or so. And when I started working with autistic children, I started saying to their mom, what's your blood type? What's your son's blood type? And over and over and over again, most of those children are blood type A. So there's definitely a relationship between blood type and what we eat. So I think somebody who is an O really is going to get weak on a very strict vegetarian diet. But again, this is why we have to get rid of all this judgment. Like, it's bad if you're a vegetarian. If you're not, you know, vegetarians think that meat eaters are cruel, awful people. And we can't have judgments like that, because that meat eating blood type O athlete has got to have that protein in his body. So many people will tell you they're much more grounded. The brain absolutely thrives on animal protein, but the quality is important and you don't need that much of it. You know, that's another thing. The way the paleo diet is done right now, people are having protein for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's too acidic. That's too much protein. And it may be way too much for a particular person, particularly that person's the blood type A. So, you know, that's what I would say about that, is that we're very unique and we shouldn't all be anything. And there is a way to learn exactly what works for your body, you know, and that's what we try to teach people. It's not hard to do.
Run through those blood types. And type A, basically, you know, this is a person who would do well on vegetarian.
Yeah, A's thrive on a high vegetable diet. Like, the Body Ecology diet is actually 80% vegetable-based and 20%, say, protein. Well, that's really, really going to work for blood type A. They could be vegetarian for a while, many of them, but they've got to get their protein from some good vegetarian sauce. Miso soup is great for A's. They do well, many of them, on some eggs. Some do well in dairy, some don't. Many A's don't do well in, like, fermented dairy, like kefir. But they've got to find a vegetarian source of getting protein in their body if they're going to be. But the A is, the Japanese have done a ton of research, about 60 years of scientific research on blood type and personality. And so the A blood type is more of a worrywart, and they're perfectionists. Most of in Japan, they're mostly blood type A. So you look at the Japanese and you see their diet, which is very rich in minerals from the sea vegetables. They have miso soup every day. They have a small amount of fish. The fish is raw. A lot of their fish is eaten raw. They do cook it sometimes, but you know, they don't have chicken. They don't have beef in their diet until recently. They didn't have milk in their diet. So they, over the thousands of years of living on these islands, they worked out a perfect diet for them, and most of them are Bone Type A. But you can see their personality because, you know, we make TVs. They make better, tinier, skinnier TVs, and we make the car. They make better cars. So that's the way of an A. They're very much perfectionists. In Japan, they encourage the A's to become scientists and teachers and researchers and doctors and so on. O's in Japan, they encourage somebody that's an O to go into a profession where they're leading a company, perhaps, because O's handle stress much better. But O's do need to take in more animal protein. They do need more fat in their diet. Nobody needs sugar. Now that we've done, you know, mapped out all the genes and looking at nutritional genomics, we know for sure nobody's genes do well on sugar. And some people, and you know how everybody thinks olive oil is so wonderful for you. It isn't. Some people with certain genes do not do well on the Mediterranean diet, do not do well on olive oil, and do not do well on wine. Even though, yes, it has resveratrol in it, you know, and resveratrol is anti-aging. And that person's body, that wine, that olive oil, that Mediterranean diet is not going to work for them. So it's actually, I know it sounds complicated, but if you hang out with us long enough, it starts to become very simple.
Well, and or if you just identify it within your own, you know, your own blood type, that can be helpful.
And I have a chapter in the book on blood type. I've really spelled out very clearly how each blood group, you know,
you stole my thunder. That's just what I was going to say. While we're on this subject now, GMOs, you know, everywhere you turn around, we're looking at, two sides of the story. We can feed the starving by maximizing our crop growth, or we're taking on mutated, engineered. What's your position with regard to genetically modified organisms?
Well, they're dangerous. They've clearly been shown that they modify the bacteria in the gut, and that's a very, very dangerous thing to do. We're creating Franken monsters inside of us, and we need those bacteria inside of us to be working for us, so that's a big mistake. I think the battle, the GMO battle, actually is being won, and people are educated. They know that they're not good. They're avoiding them in the stores, and that's going to ultimately mean that...
Yeah, but all the labeling laws are being defeated. In fact, the one in Washington State, where I am, was just defeated, and when you see who put the money into running the campaign against it, you see that it's the majors, it's the Monsantos of the world, it is the users of GMOs and their, you know, marketing and money machines that convince people to oppose labeling.
Genetically modified foods are actually in, those ingredients are in foods we shouldn't be eating anyway. If you stick with real food,
corn?
You know, real vegetables. You can also get corn that's not, you can also get organic corn, for example, an organic corn meal that won't be genetically modified. So I think what it's doing is going to force people even more so toward better choices in food. It's sad, though, because there's a huge number of people that just can't afford that. I don't want to be at odds with you here, but just because
something is labeled organic does not mean that it's not been genetically altered. The way it's grown is controlled, but not the seed itself. And we're discovering that some of the organic foods, particularly corn again, are the result of genetically modified products. And so I guess where I get to is I totally agree with you, and I'm totally in opposition to it, but I'm not as confident that the public is as informed as they need to be about this issue in order to discriminate. That's the only point.
Well, I find over and over again that this is why I think Body Ecology has been put together and is available for people now. I really use this saying a lot when I'm lecturing, as I always say, we're kind of boarding Noah's Ark again, you know. The world's messed up. Your food supply, our air, everything, water, everything is really in crisis. But, you know, So we're not having a Noah's Ark experience where the world, the whole earth gets flooded with water. People survived that time. There was, according to our scientists, a really a flooding of the earth, and people survived that time. And they did have fermented foods. It's interesting because fermented foods are actually everywhere on the planet where anybody has ever lived, any culture. So I say that that's why it's so important that these fermented foods have been brought back into the world. You know, they were completely non-existing in our culture. And I had the fortune or whatever to be guided to begin to find just a whole body of information about the importance of fermented foods and then all the science behind it, because there's a huge amount of science showing that it's critical that we have this healthy bacteria in our gut. Now, if you're going to eat something genetically modified or eat a piece of fish with mercury in it, and you're also eating and drinking fermented foods throughout the day, you're putting a vast number of these powerful probiotic little beings inside of you, and their job is to clean up their environment. So if you eat a piece of fish with mercury in it, they're going to eat that mercury up. They're going to protect you from parasites and eggs, larvae that are maybe on the plants that we washed and didn't see. You can't wash everything off, but that's okay. They're in there, you know, eating all the bad things up. So same with the genetically modified foods, is that if you just have a very, you know, small amount of bacteria in your gut because you never ate fermented foods and you don't take probiotic supplements also, then you don't have many bacteria there, and so you're going to eat genetically modified foods all the time. They're going to really affect those bacteria and change them in a negative way. But every day, for example, when I have a meal, I always have a couple of spoonfuls of fermented vegetables on my plate, and so I'm doing this all the time, so I have lots and lots and lots of healthy bacteria going in my body. I take some probiotic supplements. I think it's important for people to take bifidus bacteria, because that's not one that easily comes in on food. And so here you just have this really healthy, happy gut. And it's, you know, it's just, it's going to protect us. If we are boarding Noah's Ark again, then we sort of are in a different kind of way. People that are on the body ecology diet with the fermented foods are going to survive through this time until we wake up. We are waking up. That's the good thing. Many people are waking up. But we've got a big mess to clean up, and that's going to take a generation or two probably to clean up the mess. And the good thing is we made this big mistake with our food and our air and our water and everything and all the animals, and we can see now, oh, my gosh, you know, we can't keep using these pesticides and chemicals and eat this way. And so many people are wishing and, you know, choosing a different way of life, that what's coming next is a much better way, the best way we've ever had. People have always been unconscious about their diet. They just ate whatever they could get. Now we can get a lot of horrible stuff for ourselves. Now we're turning away from that and saying, I don't want that. I really want to put the things in my body that are good for me. When more and more people do that and they become widely available, you know, in our restaurants and schools and hospitals and stores and so on, and we're all eating that way, then we're going to have a very happy, healthy world. That's why I do believe it's very possible. I believe we're going there now. We're on our way. This is great that we keep making these mistakes like GMOs. This is how we learn what to do. Unfortunately, we have to learn the hard way, but it seems to be our way.
I like what you're saying. It sounds really good. But the naysayers are going to say, come on, that's a bunch of hocus pocus. People are living longer today than they've ever lived before. They're living healthier. 60 is the new 40, you know? How do you answer that?
Well, I don't. You see, the statistics don't agree with that. We are living longer. We're not living healthier. A huge amount of people have diabetes. They're developing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and cancers that, because people didn't live as long, we didn't probably have to deal with dementia. You know, they died at 45 or 50. There's a lot of people that are maintaining their life on drugs. They're not really healthy. Are they happy? No, I don't think. I think there's a lot of people that are alive and they're quite miserable. So I agree we're living longer. I don't believe we're really happy, not by my definition of healthy and happy.
I'll take that
we're
answer.
We're not there.
All right, let's get to some questions out of our chat room here so I'm not hogging all the time. Mark says, what about sea vegetables in the Pacific? I've heard they have some radioactivity from the Japan disaster.
Mm-hmm. Even our fish, here on the, I'm in California on the coast, the whole West Coast, when they tested the fish here, they thought they'd find some fish with some radiation. They found every fish had radiation. Same thing with the sea vegetables. Now, I prefer, I'm telling people to get their sea vegetables, like from Maine coast. That's a really clean source. But you're right. I mean, can we all stop eating fish? Sea vegetables are good, but we don't have to have sea vegetables. But fish, you know, a lot of people are eating fish. Once again, this is the importance of the fermented foods, because if I have a piece of salmon and unknowingly it's got radiation in there, that fish is going to be metabolized differently, because in my fish meal, I've got some of the healthy vegetables, I've got cultured vegetables, I might have a little wine glass with, champagne glass with one of our cocoa, our probiotic liquids. I might be drinking coconut kefir throughout the day, which is a, these foods are powerful, powerful cleansers. Like, without going, taking the time to go into the science behind them, there's huge amount of science to show how cleansing these are, what they're doing to the liver and detoxification and genes and all that. But we have to be eating this way right now, because unfortunately we have polluted our water, our air, our food supply is polluted. So people that are eating fermented foods are going to survive. I'm an example of that. I used to have a huge amount of mercury in my body because I had, you know, I took my fillings out before people knew anything about taking them out with dams. And I, if you have a baby and you're Rh negative, which I am, they put a bunch of something called Rogam shots, and then they have mercury. Just tons of mercury accumulated in my body. And I got tested, and they said, wow, you have high off-the-charts mercury. And then I got tested about, you know, within the last year, and I have no mercury, like tiny, tiny, as low as you can get on the chart. Well, I didn't do anything except eat these fermented foods and drink the coconut kefir and all. So everything I teach is about what we teach in body ecology is the principle of cleansing, how to cleanse these toxins out. And that's the purpose of the book that I just finished up, is to really teach people how to cleanse, not these light, fluffy detox programs that they think they can go into a health food store and buy a product and cleanse. There's a real art to cleansing the body properly, and it's simple and doable, but you have to know how to do it. And we have to be mindful of cleansing today, but eating the fermented foods are the most important thing you can do to cleanse your body, and that's my secret. Right. And again, why am I aging well? Well, I do feed my body well, and I do keep the toxins out, and that's really kind of all I've done. I mean, I've done it many different ways, but that's why I really don't, I still have my natural hair color, I'm still extremely limber, I still, you know, I'm just, I mean, I'm really surprised myself. I look in the mirror and I'm even thinking, gosh, I'm not aging as fast as I think would have thought I would have. And it's because of this way of eating.
All right. Loretta has this question for you. Have you had any dealings with fibromyalgia?
For many, many years. The diet worked really well. Two things. You've got to get the toxins out of your body and find, you know, and fine-tune and get the right body diet for you, but the body ecology diet will definitely help. I mean, it's, many, many people have that condition, and it's really very reversible. And I'd say highly, you'll find results quickly if you do. I'm also a big believer in colon therapy. You know, I've promoted people to do home enemas and colon therapy for decades now. And when you have fibromyalgia, you have a lot of toxins in your body, and so colon cleansing is important for that person too.
Tell us this, Donna. How do we learn more about your work, what you do? You know, how do our the listening audience? How can they reach out to you and learn more from you?
Like you, you know, and like I guess everybody today has a Facebook page. That's a good place. Joining the free, you know, signing up for the free newsletter. We try to put out really useful articles. I have a Hay House radio show at 3 o'clock on Mondays. And I really try to either myself, you know, be there answering questions if it's just me, or I have fantastic guests. I'm selecting these amazing guests because I want people to really understand healing. Like this week, if you can go there now to the Hay House Radio and listen to Julie Danilek and myself talking about inflammation, because inflammation is behind every single disease or disorder in the body, and then, you know, were kind of what I said already, you know, the fermented foods and eating right controls that inflammation, and it makes it, like fibromyalgia is a condition, for example, with a lot of inflammation. So I try to have great guests on the radio show, and we have webinars. And this year, I've just finished graduating, actually, this month with a new advanced fellowship in anti-aging medicine through American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And I really worked hard and learned extraordinary information. I'm very, very anxious to start teaching. You know, I think a lot of people are ready for science, but they want simple science, something that they can easily understand and easily apply to their life. And I love teaching, and I'm ready to do more of that. So hopefully people will just stay close to the work and, you know, step by step, that's one of the principles, in little increments, pick up a tool here, another tool there, keep adding to your toolbox, and before you know it, you'll be on just having amazing results with your life, with your health.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being with us today and sharing everything. The book is The Body Ecology Diet, and it really is a must-read. You know, I'm not one on diets. I kind of leave that to my wife. She takes very, very good care of me. She reads everything. But
you're
this
lucky to
one,
have her.
I am very lucky. This is a must-read. I suggest to all of you out there that, you know, pay attention to this. Do tune in to Donna's radio show on HayHouseRadio.com and check out her website, BodyEcology.com. All right, we've come to the end of another hour, another episode of Provocative Enlightenment. It used to be an hour. It's now 2 hours. I want to thank our guest and all of you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show, and we'll join us again next week, same time and same place. And tell your friends. Let's have them join us as well. And if you have comments on the show, do please let us know. Okay, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.
Provocative Enlightenment has been brought to you by Progressive Awareness Research and other sponsors. Provocative Enlightenment is a syndicated show and appears on other networks. For a schedule of show times, visit provocativeenlightenment.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, write to Eldon at eldontaylor.com.